Blog Talk Radio.
Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. I am so thrilled that you're with us tonight as we plan to get very inspired by Lisa Nichols. Many of you have seen Lisa on Oprah or in the movie The Secret. Now she has a brand new book out called No Matter What, and she's going to be sharing some incredible personal insights with us, so stay tuned. Well, how do you like the new Law of Attraction Radio Network site? Isn't it great? Some of the listeners have responded that it's so much easier to find all their favorite shows. Well, that's exactly what our intention was. And now, you can listen live from any host site on the Law of Attraction Radio Network. You can even join in the personal chat rooms on each host page. It's so much fun. By the way, when you're on my host page, or any host page for that matter, sign up to follow us on Twitter. And if you want to find the last 30 shows that we've had, click on the orange RSS button. You can download the shows there by simply clicking on the headset. But if you want to see even more shows beyond that, click on the iTunes button, and you can either download there from iTunes or listen while you're at the computer. We want you to be happy listeners. So if you have an issue or a comment, please feel free to shoot me off an email and let me know. By the way, did you happen to catch the Michael J. Fox special on TV the other night? It was so great and so fascinating. The part I really loved was when Michael visited Bhutan, which lies on the border of China and India. I love the fact that Bhutan government adopted gross national happiness instead of gross national products. So I wanted to take this opportunity to bring you some happy news for you to think about. Here's some research from the New York Times article published just this week that states, under a new Bhutan constitution adopted last year, government programs from agriculture to transportation to foreign trade must be judged not by the economic benefits they may offer, but by the happiness they produce. The goal is not happiness itself, the Prime Minister explained, a concept that each person must define for himself. Rather, the government aims to create the conditions for what he called, in an updated version of the American Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of gross national happiness. The Bhutanese have started within an experiment, accepting the resignation of a popular king as absolute monarch and holding the country's first democratic election just a year ago. The change is part of attaining gross national happiness, Mr. Dorey, Secretary of Information and Communication, said. They resonate well. Democracy and GNH both place responsibility on the individual. Happiness is an individual pursuit, and democracy is the empowerment of the individual. Bhutan is perhaps an easy place to nimbly rewrite economic rooms, a country with one airport and two commercial planes, where the east can only be reached from the west after 4 days' travel on mountain roads. No more than 700,000 people live in the kingdom, squeezed between the world's two populous nations, India and China. and its task now is to control and manage the inevitable changes to its way of life. It's a country where cigarettes are banned and television was introduced just 10 years ago, where traditional clothing and architecture are enforced by law, and where the capital city has no stoplight and just one traffic officer on duty. It goes on. If the world is to take gross national happiness seriously, the Bhutanese concede they must work out a scheme of definitions and standards that can be quantified and measured by the big players of the world's economy. One Bhutan said, "Okay, here we are with the GNH, the developed world and the World Bank and the IMF and so on. Ask, how do you measure it?" Mr. Doherty said, "Characterizing the reactions of the world's big economic players, the Bhutanese produced an intricate model of well-being that features the four pillars, the nine domains, and 72 indicators of happiness. Specifically, the government has determined that the four pillars of a happy society involve the economy, culture, the environment, and good governance. It breaks these into nine domains: psychological well-being, ecology, health, education, culture, living standards, time use, community vitality, and good governance, each with its own weighted and unweighted GNH index. All of this is to be analyzed using 72 indicators. Under the domain of psychological well-being, for example, indicators include the frequency of prayer and meditation and of feelings of selfishness, jealousy, calm, compassion, generosity, and frustration, as well as suicidal thoughts. We're even breaking down the time of day and how much time a person spends with the family, at work, and so on," Mr. Doherty said. Mathematical formulas have been devised to reduce happiness into its tiniest components. And then it goes on and it talks about these whole sets of formulas and equations, which I don't understand. But they're to be reassessed every two years through a nationwide questionnaire. Gross national happiness has a broader application for Bhutan as it races to preserve its identity and culture from encroachments of the outside world. How does a small country like Bhutan handle globalization? Mr. Doherty asked. We will survive by being distinct and by being different. Bhutan is pitting its four pillars, nine domains, and 72 indicators against the 48 channels of Hollywood and Bollywood that have invaded since television was permitted a decade ago. By June 1999, if you ask any young person who is your hero, the average response was, "The King," Mr. Doherty said. Immediately after that, it was David Beckham, and now it's 50 Cent, the rap artist. Parents are helpless. So if GNH may hold the secret of happiness for people suffering from the collapse of financial institutions abroad, it offers something more urgent here in this pristine culture. Bhutan's story today is, in one word, survival, Mr. Doherty said. Gross national happiness is survival. How to counter a threat to survival. That's the end of the article. But I did want to mention Michael J. Fox, who, as we all know, has Parkinson's disease. While he was filming in Bhutan, he experienced such a decrease in his symptoms that he did not need to take his Parkinson's medication. He saw him walking normally on a hike up in the hills and on the mountains, and especially while he was seated. It was absolutely fascinating. Now, he admitted that he doesn't know if it was because of the high altitude pills he was taking or any other factor, But perhaps we law of attraction followers know that it may be because of the happiness vibration that surrounded the area, induced a healthier atmosphere in which to vibrate from. Fascinating. Fascinating. I just love this. So I wanted to share this with you. Let's take a fast commercial break and get back on track here. In today's world, more and more people are turning to the internet to make money. If you're serious about creating a new source of income, then make your website an easy site. TheEasySite.com is even a great way to rejuvenate your existing website and increase traffic flow while maintaining the site yourself. It's easy. Attract new income your way with a professional website, the easy way. Remember, TheEasySite.com. That's www.TheEasySite.com. Access your forgotten abilities to create a happy and joyful life that is filled with abundance through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Listen to shows that will inspire and uplift your consciousness, required to fulfill your desires by downloading your favorite shows to your MP3 player. Join us at loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. Now let's talk about what's new on LOA Radio Network. Well, we have three brand new shows this month. Check out Match Matrix with Frank and Larry as they talk about the energy that makes up new and existing relationships. This is vital information for anyone looking for perfect love. Then we have Sabrina Kinkle with Master Your Universe Show. Wow, she talks about the economy and how to make the best of it. Great information to know. And then we have New Energy Radio with Kathy Parks. And then we have New Energy Radio with Kathy Parks, who is talking about how to stop and change directions in anything you do before it's too late. Really, really terrific shows. Well, any show that you listen to on Law of Attraction Radio Network is going to be absolutely perfect for you. I get something out of every show, and I guess it's why it's allowed me to manifest everything so quickly. I mean, who would have guessed that we just launched this network only 4 short months ago? And look at it now. It's incredible. I am thrilled. Now, here's what's coming up next week on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We are going to get into a field that I've always wanted to know more about, and that is of shamanic teachings. Hay House author Stephen Farmer will be talking with us about Earth Magic, which happens to be his latest book, and how we can get messages from our animal guides and nature. It's going to be fascinating because Dr. Farmer happens to be a practicing psychotherapist for the last 30 years. I always love it when PhDs merge science and metaphysics together. It's going to be a great show that you don't want to miss. So let's get on with tonight's show. Lisa Nichols is the best-selling author of Chicken Soup for the African American Soul book series and was one of the feature speakers in The Secret, which shot her into popularity across the globe. Lisa has appeared on Oprah, Extra, Larry King Live, and NBC's Emmy Award-winning show, Starting Over. In addition, Lisa is the founder of Motivating the Masses and CEO of Motivating the Team Spirit, LLC. I'm sure you have seen the many transformational workshops she gives in your area, where she shares her personal trials and tribulations with the world. I am so delighted to have Lisa with us. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is mine, Lisa. Lisa, let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
All right.
Why did you name the book No Matter What?
Well, the title No Matter What is more than a title. It's a way of, it's a decision. No Matter What is not a statement to me. It's a decision. That until I say no matter what, until I've said no matter what in my life, I would normally say, I really want something. I really desire something. God, it would be nice if. And what I recognize is when I say that, the outcome that I'm looking for is really still optional. It's when I say no matter what that it becomes non-negotiable. It's when I say no matter what that fear can't sit at my table, wonder and doubt can't sit at my table, that the only thing that's available is that outcome. And so a no matter what mindset really is, and you may not have a no matter what mindset about everything in your life, but when you laser on something and you say, I am going to achieve that goal no matter what, I believe that the law of attraction and the law of attraction is setting your intentions. It's about believing it. It's about speaking it. It's about visioning it. It's about doing that. And that is absolutely the seed from which everything else grows. I believe it's the law of no matter what that brings it to you, because you begin to move every other obstacle out of your way. We would like to believe that we can go toward our goal and there's nothing that's going to pop up and interrupt us in our journey to happiness. But the reality is that life happens. The relationship that we really was involved, that we really wanted to work, went left instead of right. Our children, our siblings are having challenges that are impacting us. You know, somewhere on this journey, I picked up an extra 25 pounds that I didn't plan to. I looked in the mirror one day, and I wasn't really liking who I saw. And so it's when we say no matter what, we don't allow those speed bumps in our life to become stop signs.
So how do we get to the place that we're going to do this no matter what?
In every chapter of the book No Matter What, in every chapter of the book, I talk about how to shift from being stuck. And if you notice, as I'm writing the book, there's three different components in every chapter. There's how do you build this muscle called your understanding muscle? How do you build this muscle called your honesty muscle? How do you build this muscle called your I know like I know muscle? I talk about that, and then I give you a piece of Lisa. So there's a memoir piece in every chapter, but the unique part about the memoir is that it's a place in my life where I'm stuck. I'm totally stuck. And they're all real. They're all a lot of Lisa stuff in there, and they're real. And then I give you inspired action steps that I took and I inspire and I encourage the reader to take to get them unstuck. So I love your question. What happens when you're stuck? What happens when something happens? Okay, well, we need to get in action as it relates to that particular muscle in our character being developed even more.
And that's where you've developed the 9 key bounce back muscles. Tell us about that.
Yes, and I call them bounce back muscles because self-help has been integral in my life, and I love all the books that are out there, and I love the opportunities that are out there to grow. But what I recognized was missing was, number one, what I saw was everything had the steps. Here are the first 3 steps to, you know, having financial wealth. The first 3 steps to, or here are the 3 steps or 5 steps or 7 steps to having the relationships in your life. And I say 9 steps as well. But what I realized was I was getting step 1, step 2, and step 3 to support me moving towards something, but I was missing step 0. And so this book really is step 0. All 9 steps really sit inside of this is what you do first. And what I mean by that is 1, 2, and 3 are going to tell you the action steps to go to increase your bank account, increase your wealth, enhance your relationship, lose the weight, whatever it is. This book is step 0 because this deals with the setbacks you may have had, the negative conversation you may have that's preventing you from giving yourself permission to do those other steps. This book deals with the negative chatter in your head that while you're in the middle of building the life you love, you start beating yourself down. No one else is doing it to you. You're doing it to yourself. This is step 0 because it's about, oh, by the way, if on your way to success, you know, you get in a relationship that doesn't serve you, this is how you get back on track. Oh, by the way, on your way to success, if you start taking 20, 30, 50 pounds with you that you didn't sign up to bring along the way, this is how you love yourself until it can melt away.
Mm.
So I call it the step 0 to all the how-tos, like put this in front so that you emotionally put yourself in a position so that you can receive all the diamonds that are out there in other programs.
And that leads us in to the first step.
The first step inside, at least reading this book and going here, is to be receptive. You know, most people, and I'm getting a lot of really phenomenal feedback from every end of the spectrum. I just read an email not 20 minutes ago from a gentleman who I met on a plane on my way to New York. He's a high-powered financial advisor, and he only advises superstars and athletes. And his first line was, this was one of the most challenging books I've ever read. It made me look at myself. I can only digest 1 to 2 pages at a time, and I want to thank you for it. This is much more than a book. This is a life tool. And so I understand that it's difficult, because what I'm asking you to do is I'm asking you to confront yourself. I'm asking you to be with yourself in a new way. I'm asking you to embrace yourself in a new way. I'm asking you to, instead of avoiding and being right out ahead of all your doubt, I'm asking you to turn around and look at your doubt, walk towards your doubt, and then dissolve your doubt into the nothingness that it is. But in order to do that, you're going to have to embrace it. You're going to have to speak to it. You're going to have to bring it to life and recognize two things. Number one, the power it's had. One, that you have it. That's number one, that you have it. And two, the power that it's had in your life. And so, you know, you ask, what's the step after this? This step is a huge step. This will take a minute to go through. Everyone is telling me, and I didn't say this was going to be the case when I was writing the book, but people are telling me it's a read that I had to read twice. I read it the first time and just took it in, because it reads almost like a novel, believe it or not, which is why a lot of people in the self-help industry love it, because it has my stories in it. It has real-life stories that I bring you right there. I put you in the bathroom with me when I'm out getting out of the shower, and in the act of drying off my body, I recall someone else touching my body as a young child. I put you right there. I put you right there with me, my intuition telling me to get out of this relationship. And because I was 5 months from marriage, I wanted to save face, for lack of better words. And I was grateful that he chose me with a young baby. And I woke up at 3:20 in the morning with his hands wrapped around my throat, because I didn't listen to my intuition. And so in this book, I share those darkest hours with him, because I believe that I live in a light that's so bright. Sometimes I got to tell you, I can barely, the glare, you know, blinds me. But the only reason why I can celebrate the light, Jewel, to its fullest degree is because I've embraced the darkness, and I've acknowledged the darkness, and I've looked at the darkness and understood why I was there, and how that darkness helps me stand in my light that much better.
By having the courage to turn around and look you straight in the eye, this would resolve issues in all areas of your life, right?
Oh, completely. Finances, relationships, health, and spirituality as well.
Oh,
I mean, there's not a place that doesn't escape that process, which is great, because when you know you have the opportunity, the power, and now with this book, some tools. Because what I do is I realize that, Jewel, that's not an easy step. That's not a leap. Get in the mirror and just do it. Find a way to love yourself and move on. That sounds great, but that's not real. I didn't have that experience, at least. And so what I did here was I slowed it down. I said, okay, first, let's find the dot that says you are here. If you were in a mall and you wanted to get to point B and you knew you were at point A, the first thing you have to do with the kiosk is find the dot that says you are here. And once you find that dot that says you are here, then you navigate, you look at where you want to get to, and you begin to plan that route. Most of us are walking around only knowing where we want to get to, but we haven't yet stopped to find the dot that says, I am here. I am here about my weight. I am here about my spirituality. I am here about my finances, and I am here about my health. I am here about my relationships. And most of us don't want to acknowledge the I am here. And so this book really stops you, loves you, embrace you, and encourage you and holds you accountable to really finding the dot and then navigating the path to what you call success. I used each muscle to help me get through a different point in my life. Chapter 1 talks about your understanding muscle, and that really focuses on understanding the gift that may have come wrapped in sandpaper. And if I can turn every, not some, not most, but every experience into my life that's happened to me, every story that I would tell, every incident that has occurred to me, if I can look at every single one of those that I didn't like, that were uncomfortable to me, as a gift that had come wrapped in sandpaper, and in order to really find the gift, I have to push past the pain and go and ask a better question. Most of us, Jewel, are asking poor, disempowering questions. We say, why me? Well, if you ask why me, then you're going to get a why you answer. But if you ask a better question, you'll get a better answer. The quality of your answers are directly related to the quality of your question. So instead of saying, why did this happen? I want to find the gift and everything. I want to find the gift of being touched inappropriately. I want to find the gift of, you know, being academically challenged for 12 years while I was in school. I want to find the gift of living between the Harlem Crip 30s and the Rolling 60s and having to fight 3 days a week. Please help me find the gift in that so that I can be at peace with that, so that I can not stand in my story, but I begin to stand on my story. My story isn't my fortress. My story is my fuel. It becomes my platform by which I can be who I am today. And so when you ask what's the gift, the better question is, so what part of my character has been built because of this situation? What part of my resiliency has been built because of the situation? And the answer that you'll get, thank you, the answer that you'll get from the universe is, and you'll give it, self will give it as well, is you have the gift of patience now. You have the gift of surrender now. You have the gift of setting better boundaries now. You have the gift of fire now. You got fire in your soul now because you are a survivor, because you had to survive that. You have the gift of compassion now. Now you understand when someone else is going through abuse. Now you can love them through it because you know firsthand what. So there's a gift. And the ugliest situations that you don't want to ever happen again, let me be clear of that. You don't want to happen to anyone else again, let me be clear of that. But in the event that it should happen, there is a gift that came wrapped in sandpaper that we can search for. That's just in chapter one. It's about redefining intimacy. Intimacy is defined socially as a romantic act between two people. That's the only way we've ever determined intimacy. Well, I found a better, juicier, wonderful way to define intimacy, and that is if you write this down, you write N hyphen, the number 2 hyphen, M-E hyphen, I hyphen, C hyphen, N to me, I see. Oh. And when I am willing to look into my own soul and be with me, embrace all of my imperfections, and to realize that I'm perfectly managing my imperfections, that's all we're doing, is we're perfectly managing our imperfections, or we're imperfectly managing our imperfections, and we get to manage our imperfections better. That I, when I get to see into me, embrace me, love me, and most of all, forgive me, and most of all, give myself permission for something greater than what I'm currently getting at every level, no matter where I am. It's about giving myself permission to receive something even greater. Okay, you're here, and you now have permission to go to the next level, because I can't give you permission. I can pour into you all day long, Jewel, but until you give yourself permission to receive anything I'm saying, it falls on deaf ears. And so this book is about into me I see, a journey within so that I can emerge more complete, more powerful, and more full of what's good, and that I'm not operating like a sifter, meaning there are holes in the bottom unplugged. There are holes of insecurity, holes of fear, holes of doubt, holes of worry. And whenever something is poured onto me that's wonderful, it really can't stick. It goes right through the holes in the bottom. That I am going to spend time with me plugging up any possible hole that's there and celebrating the holes that I've already done a while ago. And I'm really excited, and I'm more excited about it now, Jewel, because I said at the beginning of this journey, the book is not complete when I write it. The book is not complete when it's published. The book is only complete when I write it, it's published, you read it, you apply it, and you get something from it. That's when it's complete.
You have definitely found your mission.
My mission is to serve, to heal, and inspire people, and to recognize that when I stand in my, what I call, naked truth, uncomfortable truth. I got to tell you, there were chapters in this book that only took me 7 days to write, but they took me like 4 months to decide to give you that part of me. Oh, I got to tell you. And there was a time when I was writing chapter 7 and chapter 8, which I believe were the most painful parts of my life experience. And I struggled with, hey, I can give them a really great book without telling this story. I don't have to do this to myself. What am I doing? And here again is that charge that when we as teachers are willing to come off the podium, off the stage, and sit and be with each other, we are lacking connection in this day of email, voicemail, snail mail, Twitter mail, you know, all the mails. Mm-hmm. There's no, let me be with you. Let me sit at the foot of your bed and be with you so that you can feel safe enough to give me who you really are. this book, and you know, I'm hearing it from the hundreds, thousands of people, this book has created a safe space because I put so much skin in. But I got to tell you, writing chapter 7 and 8, I decided, you know what, I don't want to put that much skin in. You know, the secret teacher is going to keep a couple of secrets, you know. And I was convicted. And I wanted to stop, but my spirit kept telling me, you got to give them all. You have to tell the truth when it hurts, because when you tell the truth when it hurts, you're going to inspire someone else to tell the truth when it hurts, and you're going to let them free themselves from those demons of doubt and wonder and worry and, oh, my God, I can't let people know that about me. If they knew that about me, they wouldn't consider me the expert or the genuine love or the child of God or whatever it is that they doubt. When you stand in your naked discomfort level of truth, then you give them permission to do the same. So I printed out a cover of the book. The book was not done yet. I pasted the book cover onto someone else's book. And I took this fake book into Barnes and Noble's, and it, you know, had No Matter What on the cover, and I set it up under New Release. And I stood there in Barnes and Noble's in the front of the store where you see the new releases, and I cried for 20 minutes. And, Jewel, I didn't cry the discreet cry, honey. I cried the ugly cry. And when I was crying, what I was battling within my soul was, are you going to play full out, or are you going to stop right now? Because in order to move forward, you have to be truly transparent so that you can free people's spirit and soul through your word, so that they can give, wow, if the secret teacher, the chicken soup lady, the lady who had been on Oprah and Larry King and all that stuff, that gives us it almost becomes a label that says you can't be wrong. You have to always appear perfect. Well, I don't want to live under that. I am so incredibly human. And when I get that, I get to make mistakes and stand back up, that it's not in the not making the mistake that makes me so wonderful to people who love me. It's the making the mistake and getting back up sooner, quicker, faster that has people love me so much. And to stand in that truth and to stand in that permission, that I give myself permission to tell you the darkest parts of my life and to still, in that story, stand in my light that I currently stand in. And that one doesn't discourage the other. The fact that I'm in my light today doesn't negate my darkness, because when you read this book, you're going to feel that. You're going to go through your stuff. You're going to go through my stuff. You're going to cry with me. You're going to laugh hysterical with me. And then what it does is it makes today even sweeter.
That makes so much sense.
You know, I had a woman tell me, I bought your entire book for page 40. She said, page 40. She did. She just told me this week. She said, page 40, the title of page 40 is Don't Try to Supersize Another Person. And it has, it's an exercise. It literally is the exercise that I have you do. She said to me, I can do this exercise with everyone in my life for the rest of my life. I will never forget it. She said, this has transformed my relationship with my family, even those who are deceased. How valuable is that? Because here, your business doesn't define your success. Let's be clear, your relationships define your success. The quality of your life is a direct relationship to the quality of the people and the relationships that are all around you. That's what helps to put the fiber that on your transition bed, when you have 24 hours to live, you're not going to say, I should have started another business. You're not going to say, I should have attended another seminar. You're never going to say, you know, I should have made $10,000 so I can take it with me. No, that's not the case. You're going to be there on your transition bed saying, I should have told her I loved her more. I should have told him I appreciated him more. I should have looked in the mirror and celebrated my greatness more instead of picking apart my skin and my chin sagging and my breast sagging and my hips spreading. I should have just loved on me more. I should have set my champion free sooner, quicker, faster. I played small, trying to play it safe, and now my champion has to transition with me. So this book is about saying, let's do it all now. So in the exercises, just the exercises that I give you, you start celebrating you more, celebrating your relationships more, and you start releasing that champion sooner, quicker, faster. You start doing the things that you thought you wouldn't do. I mean, literally, if you just do the exercise. I had a colleague the other day, Alex Mendozian, who I love and admire, And Alex said that he, because he's a now kind of guy, begin with the end in mind, he said, I read the book twice. He goes, the first time I read the book, I just went straight to the action steps because I wanted to get to action. He said, I just did all the action steps, and they were amazing. He said, that was one book by itself. He said, then I went back and read the story and read what led up to the action steps. I thought, I never heard it done that way, but okay, if it works for you. And so we all want, but we want palatable, digestible steps to get to where we want to be. I find that with a lot of programs, the leap was too big for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, do this and do that and do this and then this will happen. And I thought, well, can you help me get over my negative self-talk first so I could do that? And so what I committed to give to people was just the baby steps, but they're big, babe. They're hard. They're not easy, but they're the internal things. And to let you know why I chose to write the book like this and write about no matter what and write about overcoming every obstacle no matter what, why I chose this approach and why I chose to do it now was because when I was on the Oprah Winfrey Show, within 72 hours of being on her show, I received 9,782 emails.
Wow.
And over 98% of those emails all had the exact same question, but they were from black people, white people, Asian people, Latino people, 16-year-olds and 65-year-olds, men and women, rich and students. And I say students because that was in my life I was poor as a student, but, you know, rich and not rich. And all of them had the same thread in their question. The question was, Lisa, how can I live this great life when this here happened to me? And they would describe the this here in explicit detail. Lisa, how can I live the life I love when I've been going through this? And I realized that everyone was attaching their future joy to their past chaos and measuring how much joy they get to have, how much happiness they get to have based on their previous experiences. And I thought, oh, my God, I got to write a book that talks about how your past doesn't define your future. But I can't say it like that because we've heard that before. Great cliche, sounds good, and it's true, but we're numb to that statement now. And so I have to open it up. What does that mean? Okay, that means that even though I was molested when I was 5, that I get to experience, and even though at 25 I had a lot of sex looking for a little love because I didn't know that the room called love didn't have to be entered through the door called sex. I thought, I didn't know it was another way. And so I realized that even after molestation, even after my 25, 26-year-old challenges and poor decisions, that I still get to celebrate. Just yesterday, I celebrated 21 months of the most spiritually grounded, emotionally centered, fruitful, abundant, amazing relationship that I've ever had.
Wow.
That even after all of that, I still get this. And even after gaining 80 pounds and using weight as a jacket to shield my heart, that my jacket was my shelter, my jacket was my weight, that even after 80 pounds and feeling like I was always going to be obese, that I can make a decision one day, get in the mirror, tell myself the truth. And that was only after, I got to tell you, this happened after I wrote this book. Because I had to live the book, of course. I couldn't just write the book. I got to live the book. And so after chapter 5, Developing Your Honesty Muscle, I got so honest about my weight. And when I got honest about my weight, and it wasn't about, oh, I ate late at night, and oh, I made poor choices. My weight was about, it was a jacket of shelter for me, that I didn't have to be physically and sexually responsible with 80 pounds on. I can just be distant from everyone. And that I needed to learn how I can love someone and not have a physical relationship with them if that's what I choose. I didn't know I could do that. I had to be honest with myself at that level. I got to tell you, I'm the first person who was helped by chapter 5. I'm like, oh, that's a good chapter. It works because I had to do it. See, most people, you know, diets don't work,
right?
Because we're in action of a behavior, but we haven't addressed the emotion that led to the behavior that led to the outcome. So we're all walking around acting out our feelings, but we don't want to discuss feelings,
right?
But we're just acting out our feelings when we are defensive. we're defensive. That's just, well, she's just a defensive person, or he's a defensive person. He, you know, I'll bite your head off. That's not just, he's not just a defensive person. I'm defensive because I'm afraid that you're going to hurt me. So I have to lunge back at you to back you up. Or someone who is weak and timid, and they're quiet, and they don't speak up for themselves. I'm not just weak and timid, or I'm not just quiet and don't speak up for myself just because I chose to be this way. I'm this way because I'm afraid of something. I'm afraid if I speak up, I might not be accepted, or I'm afraid if I speak up, you might not like me. So there's a behavior behind every action, and you have to be willing. That's chapter 5. Just keep peeling back the layer. Why do I do that? Why did I do that? Why did I say that? Keep going, and when it stings, don't stop. Keep going. When I found the core of my why I put on 80 pounds, I got to tell you, it immobilized me. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Okay, now I can address that. Now I'm applying the medicine, the prescription, to the right to the right issue. Because the medicine normally for losing weight is eat less.
Right.
Well, that's not addressing why I put the weight on. That's not addressing, you know what I mean?
And that's why after you stop the dieting, the weight always comes back and more.
Because you're not addressing it. It's like, you know, let me just kind of keep covering up this toxic issue. It doesn't change the way. You can get me dressed really wonderful, but if my body is full of toxins, my body's still full of toxins, and they're going to spread. And no matter what suit you put on, no matter how much bling you put on me, I still have an unhealthy body or mind. And so this book really goes, okay, the good news is you're the surgeon, and you get to sit with you and say, okay, what hurts? Okay, now, how? And then do the action steps, and what made that hurt, okay? And I'm not, and by no means am I saying use this instead of therapy or use this, but here's what I love. I have a friend who's a psychologist, and she just gave this book to one of her clients. She goes, I'm so excited. I believe this is going to create a breakthrough for her. And this is a woman who has decided not to speak at all. She's had so much trauma that she won't speak anymore. And for her doctor to feel like this book is a solution for her, or one of the tools on her journey, oh, I'm grateful.
Mm.
Now, I want to say that and say, you don't have to be all broken to pick up this book. I don't want you to get that relationship to it, because some of the people that are in my life, matter of fact, the woman who said she picked the book up for page 40 is one of the most advanced trainers I've ever met, and she's just about learning and growing. And so the book for her is allowing her to learn and grow even more. And I'm listening to the audio of the book, and I'm not listening to it to assess myself. I'm listening to it because the book is organic. You can pick it up today and get value from it. Put it down for 2 years, pick it up again, and there's another chapter that's now appropriate for you to focus on. So you have your understanding muscle, your faith in myself muscle, which is the believing in you before anyone else does, and it's learning how to press stop on your mind's negative chatter. You have the take action muscle, keeping you in action. Most people around the world, when they talk about The Secret to me, they say, Lisa, I watched The Secret 79 times, and I'm visualizing my life, and I set my intention, but nothing's happening. I said, well, that's because you've been on the couch watching the movie a lot. You need to get in action. That nothing happens until you apply action. That the antidote to despair is action, and the prescription to success is action. So chapter 3 focuses on your take action muscle. That, yes, watch The Secret. I think it's one of the best pieces of work ever made, but it's only a piece of the conversation. It's not the entire conversation. You need to apply action steps to it.
I think a question that comes up all the time is, how do I know I'm making the right choice on the proper action? How do I know that this may be inspired action versus reactive action?
Well, number one, you set your intention on what, and you ask the question, what can lead me to the right road? Ask a better question. And like in chapter from page 63 to about page 89, I give you some ways to take action. So you set, first you plan it out. To me, every great goal, even in your relationship, requires a plan. And it just works better when you're working the plan. You know, design your life plan and then just work the plan. And you're going to have things that change because you keep your goal in mold, you keep your plan in sand, meaning you're going to change direction. You're going to change venues. You might even change partners along the way. But keep your goal in mold. What do you want? And when I say your goal in mold, that's my life is to encourage, heal, and inspire people. And I'll say it different ways every time, but it's always that same energy. Encourage, heal, and inspire people. That's my goal in mold. Now, I didn't think I would be doing it with The Secret 5 years ago. The Secret, or 10 years ago, The Secret wasn't a conversation. I don't even think Rhonda Byrne knew about The Secret 10 years ago, you know. So I didn't think I'd be a part of that, but it was in alignment with my goal. I never woke up one morning saying, Jewel, gosh, I really want to be on television. I never had a desire to be on TV. I wasn't against it, but it just wasn't in my plan. However, I wanted to heal and inspire people. And so in 2010, I'll do it via television. Okay, it still goes in alignment with my goal. So, but there's a plan that you start with. So, you know, talk about the goal, identify the goal, and then identify the milestones, which are those pivotal points that let you know you're on the right track. You need to, it's like when you are getting directions somewhere. If you're driving from California to Texas to get to me so we can hang out, and you, they say, you know, halfway through, you're going to see, you know, this building, you know, and if you don't see the federal building or you don't see the state building, you know you're on the wrong path. We always do that when we're physically going somewhere, right? But we don't do that in our life goals. So when you set a goal for yourself, set milestones. And I always say I have to have at least 3 milestones. So I just kind of know I'm in the right direction. And as well, when I hit my milestone, those are moments to stop and celebrate because we don't celebrate ourselves enough. We're so busy being busy, trying to get somewhere that we forget to stop and celebrate our milestones. So I create at least three very clear milestones that tells me and lets me know I'm on the right path. Mm-hmm. And then under those milestones, I create action steps, clear, doable, bite-sized, palatable, digestible action steps that are not so huge they take me forever to get to. If they're really big, they're probably a milestone, but the action steps are small things. And so I follow the action steps. Then I get to the milestone. I stop. I look around. I say, I like where I am. This is how you can say you're not going on down the wrong path. Do you see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And I stop. I get to the milestone, and I assess. At every milestone, I assess, is this taking me toward the ultimate goal that I want? And I have to tell you, Jewel, there have been some times where I've developed an action plan, and I did my action steps. I got to a milestone. I looked around. I said, wow. If I keep doing it this way, I'm not going to get there. It's going to look differently. And then I assess and I make the appropriate shift so that I can really end up where the goal is. Or I look back at the goal again and see, was that goal defined correctly?
Let's talk about faith and how that takes place in the action step.
Faith plays a part in every single thing you touch because before you start, you need to have faith to know that it's going to work out. Before you start, you need to know. I believe that we each have our own personalized internal GPS system,
right.
Personalized for us, and that it's a whisper. It doesn't yell at us. If you hear yelling, that's your self-talk, that's your chatter. Intuition doesn't yell, but intuition does get loud if you're not listening to the whisper, for me at least. And I've heard other people say, yeah, I felt it, and then the feeling got stronger. Then I start seeing signs that I wasn't supposed to be going down this path, and, you know, you keep ignoring them, and they keep getting louder and louder. Faith plays a key role because, and let's just speak of times like this when we're going through what they would like to call a recession, and it's my personal opinion that over 85% of the recession is emotional.
I agree.
It's fear-based, it's worry-based, it's doubt-based, scarcity-based thinking. And the good news about that is that I can choose not to participate in that part, and mm-hmm. I choose to not participate in the recession, that I choose to. Now, I do have to watch my dollars and be more fiscally responsible than I've been in the past, but I should have been that 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're thinking of, and you're in a moment like this, let's say a time like this, Your faith has to basically drive you, Jewel, right now. You have to understand and know what's available to you, even if you don't see it physically.
Let's talk about the I know what I know muscle.
That's really where we were just playing, and that's the being able to know that there is something happening on your behalf even when you can't see it. That was a particularly dark chapter for me. It actually was one of the most, the chapters, what I did was I picked several stories in my life that felt like they were debilitating to me, and they were challenging for me to get through. And this particular chapter, I don't know if you had a chance to read it. It's the one that I haven't talked about yet, believe it or not. And I've had over 50 interviews in the last 24 days. And I haven't talked about the content of this particular chapter yet.
Well, I'm all ears.
Because this was the one. This was one of the chapters that I said I could easily go to my grave never sharing this part of my life, and I'd be perfectly fine with that. And it was the time where I actually spent 27 hours in jail because I, based on a failure to appear in court, the judge had mailed a notice to appear in court to everyone in a former company that I was working in. And even though I was on the order desk and I was the peon in the company, everyone had to receive a notice to appear based on the corporation's position. And I lived somewhere different, and my mom had my mail, and she just let it pile up, and I'll see it, and I give it to her, and I get it to her. Well, in that pile of mail was a notice to appear. So you don't appear, you get in trouble. Mm. So I opened my door one morning to two private investigators standing at my door. On my way to my brand new job that I'd only had for 7 days after being unemployed for 90 days. And I, in an instant, was being carted off to jail. And I knew that I needed to hold on to something greater than me. Because I was raised in South Central Los Angeles, where friends and neighbors of mine in the community, the boys just, at some point, they would just disappear for months or years, and they would go to jail. And so my family and I, we made a pact that we don't visit jail, we don't go to jail, and it became a big fear of mine where you know what you put energy in, where energy goes,